Hey guys, it's another bonus episode.
Now, Ethnically Ambiguous, and today we have a very special guest, the other co-host of Good Muslim, Bad Muslim. Introduce yourself.
Zara Norbach.
That was better than me attempting to butcher it. So it's a great conversation. We talk about her upbringing in Northern California, how she got into comedy, and how she discovered stand-up.
Yes, so stay tuned.
Who are we? Where did we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Wow, Cherie.
Wow, Anna.
It is another bonus episode of Ethnically Ambiguous where we interview a guest and force them to tell us about their upbringing, lives, everything else we want.
We force them to open up and tell us their most vulnerable, deepest secrets. And then you guys get to hear it all, intimate friends. And the person that we have on today is
We have two people on today. One's not a people. One's a doggy.
Oh my God. I've never met her, and you have, right?
Him. Oh, no, you.
Oh.
I'm talking about you.
You're talking about the doggy.
No.
Yeah, technically.
You're the guest. You're the guest.
Look at me take care of my dog's male pronoun. Him. It's him.
He identifies as a he.
He him.
No, we're talking about you, and you are, you just said your name to me, but I'm going to pronounce it the way you told me to, which is Zara.
Yeah.
Zara Norbash. But in Arabic, it's Norbash.
Norbash?
I mean, here's the thing. Oh. This is my name. How it is pronounced in my mother tongue.
Okay.
Zahra Norbakhsh.
Yeah, I thought I was going to say Norbakhsh.
But see, people have a hard time saying Bakhsh.
Yeah.
Because
and
it's
Zahra is a beautiful, it means flower.
S-H. Yeah.
It's a beautiful.
Well, and the way you're pronouncing it is the Arabic pronunciation.
Uh-huh.
And then the Persian pronunciation is Zahra.
Zahra.
It's like there's the H doesn't have as much emphasis.
And I'm saying Zahra.
Right.
Mm.
So, and you are?
Zara.
But your ethnic background,
I'm Iranian.
Okay, so you would pronounce it Zahra.
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 This is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
This is what I'm saying. This is like, you know.
But for me, I want to pronounce it like an Arabic word. Does it also mean flower in Persian? In Farsi?
Because it's kind of like if, the name Alex means, doesn't it mean like Aryan leader or conqueror or something like that?
Oh, I have no idea.
Yeah, like it doesn't matter. Like I should pick like probably a less Nazi-like name. But the root word or the it has its etymology. It means the same thing like across geography.
Word.
Yeah, yeah.
That's cool.
But like it's like one of those things where everyone like, you know, that's why I love this show.
Uh-huh.
Ethnically ambiguous. It's ambiguous. Let it be ambiguous.
Yeah.
Everybody has their country mother tongue's way of saying my name because it's traveled time and space. And so, like, you know, everyone has their way of saying it. But the way that Persians say it is very different.
Yeah.
And sounds really like when I say salam to a group of Muslims, everyone is like, why do you say salam wrong?
Not salam.
Right, exactly. And I'm like, salam, what do you mean?
Yeah, and your nur means light.
Yeah.
But what does
in
it mean?
In Arabic, too.
Yeah. Nur is pretty common, I feel like. Yeah. That's a good root word. Yeah.
I have cousins named nur, both male and female.
Yeah, I have a nur or two in my life.
Hmm.
Do you know what it is? Nur bakhsh? I don't know.
Yeah, bakhsh means to spread.
Spread the light.
Spread the light.
Flower that spreads the light.
I'm enlightening.
That's great.
You're a sunflower. Or not really.
No, I'm enlightening.
Sorry.
I also, I don't know if it means like enlightening or if it means forgiveness.
Because
bakhshide also means to forgive, right?
Bakhshish.
I did not make that connection at all until you said that.
This is probably a different root, but bakhshish in Arabic means tips. Like like tipping a waiter.
Oh, I like it.
She did.
Tips. But that's bakhshish.
Bakhshish.
But like no matter what, I win here, right?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, light spreading or tips.
Yeah.
Or forgiveness.
Either way, you're flower and
plus
light.
Tips. Flower light.
Flower light. You're like, if you had like a white hippie name, you'd be like, flower light child.
You guys want to hear a story about my name?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so when I was a little kid, you know how you go to kindergarten? And then you learn your name is weird.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Okay, so I was in kindergarten and they were like, you know, your name is weird, Zara, Zara, Zero, Zara, Zara, Zorro. And I was like, I want to be Jessica.
Yeah.
And And I told my dad, I want to change my name to Jessica. And he got so hurt.
Yeah.
His feelings got hurt. And he was like, why would you want to change your name to Jessica? Don't you know what your name means? Zahra. Zahra. You were the nickname of Hazrat Fatimiya Zahra. They nicknamed her Zahra because she brought light into everyone's eyes. Do you know why? Because the day that you were born, they stopped burying baby girls alive. They thought that boys were better than girls. Yeah. And then the prophet's daughter came and she was a girl and they knew, oh, girls are important. Wow. They stopped burying baby girls alive. And my mom was like, she is in kindergarten.
They stopped.
Well, he's like, you brought feminism to the Middle East.
Yeah. Like, pulled out a PowerPoint that he had saved up for like just the proper occasion.
So then the next day I went to kindergarten. That's what I said. My teacher said, how do you say your name again? I said, my name is Zahra. I brought feminism to the Middle East. They were burying baby girls alive before I came.
And they're like, we're going to have to call your parents.
That was the beginning of a lot of parent-teacher conferences. FBI visits.
I'd never heard that. That's amazing.
Wow. Yeah, it was powerful for me.
I mean, I knew men were more important this whole time.
And, but, well, they still are in a lot of cultures. And I mean, in the world.
Yeah.
But not in this room.
No.
Yeah. So
the only man here is this dog. And he's a little
got
bitch.
No nuts.
You know, I was worried that you brought a dog with nuts around us. No, what if we were that sensitive? We're like, okay, so just want to make sure that you're
this is a feminine
super
space.
Masculine dog.
Yeah. Wookie! Well,
the dog's name is Wookie.
Yeah, he's very cute. I want to rewind a little bit. So let's just go back to where your parents are from and like when they immigrated here. I'm guessing they immigrated here because you did speak in an accent when you were talking about them. That's just me assuming. And just like a little bit about your backstory.
My parents are Iranian. Mm-hmm. They came here like 77, 78. Mm-hmm. They came here for school.
Okay.
And then a revolution happened.
And a war broke out.
Yeah. Yeah, in Iran. And they couldn't go back. Mm-hmm. And they were always under the impression that they were going to go back. They were just students. They were here. Like, they didn't have...
Did they meet in Iran or here?
They met in Iran. And then they came here as a married couple. They didn't expect to not be able to go back.
Yeah.
And for the situation to escalate, like so many people did not expect. And there were so many points in our lives where we thought, you know, we're going to go back. We're going to go back. We're going to go back. And so there was always this feeling of like, don't unpack, you know. And then one day when I was 14.
Wait, where were you born?
I was born here. I was born in Sacramento, California. U.S. citizen.
Whoop, whoop. Like my Davis Farmers Market tea.
Yeah, what's up? Okay, so I was born back when Davis didn't have a hospital.
Really?
Oh, right?
Yeah.
1980.
Wow. Now they have... where Anna and I met in UC Davis.
Oh, yeah. No way. Oh, my God.
My parents live in Davis now.
Yeah. And but, so did your parents both go to NorCal, I guess, when they immigrated here?
Yeah. So my dad went to University of Michigan, and then it was like UCI and then UC Davis.
Okay. Studying what?
Studying, I think, you know, I don't know what it was back then because to study computer science, it wasn't like, it wasn't established yet. Mm. You had to learn like mechanical engineering and like other stuff that I don't know that sounds technical. And
like electrical
engineering.
It's like, exactly. I'm glad he became an engineer as both my parents.
It's very
Iranian. I was concerned for a second. I was like, oh, but did he become an engineer?
Oh, yeah. Computer chip network designer.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so that's like he basically studied to become an engineer, but had to go through all the other routes of whatever was becoming computer science at the time or whatever.
Yeah, It was like an evolving field for sure.
Yeah.
So when you were 14, what happened?
Then when I was 14, we went to Iran for the first time since I was a kid.
Yeah.
Like since I was two. And I didn't know that that was the visit to decide if we were going to stay.
Oh.
And my parents made the decision to stay here in the United States. And I was like devastated because I met my cousins for the first time. Mm-hmm. I was in junior high, which is like a self-loathing place.
Yeah.
That's the law. You have to be self-loathing. Everybody hates themselves and pretends like they don't and pretends like they hate you more. Mm-hmm. And I like... remember being ready to go, and then my dad was like, we're staying. Watch VH1. catch up.
Fuse and refuse.
Yeah, because I like my dad didn't let us, like, he tried to raise us with a cultural parallel of what was happening in Iran so that it wouldn't be a super shock when we went.
Yeah.
So it was like, no music is allowed, no dancing, you know, like, no television. And then all of a sudden he was like, well, we're not going. Okay, so you could do what you want.
That happened when you were 14.
Yeah. And I was like, that's why this whole time? You were just like raising me like I was a kid in Iran in California?
Just in case.
And he was like, well, we can have these open conversations now because you're going to be a California kid. So I guess,
after 14 years of Californian life. Like, wait, what was that being like? How was that like being raised then in California, not having any TV or music or dancing or anything? Like, what was it? I mean, you were surrounded by Californians.
I mean, it just basically means that I'm like this blank slate face when people mention music. And I'm like, yeah, sure, okay. You know, it's like walking into a football game and everybody knows the history and everybody's picked a side and why and the players they love. And you're just like, so hummus is on the table. That's great. Yum.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. Where in Iran were your parents from?
So my mom's family is from Qom. Qom, the religious capital of Iran.
Oh, is that right?
The mullah town. And my dad's family's from Tehran.
Okay.
Which is like, what's up?
Yeah, big city.
How did they meet?
They met because, like, I think my mom already had someone in her family who was, like, sleeping with my dad's sister or something like that. They were married, is what I mean.
It was in with the fam?
It was already in with the fam. They already kind of knew each other. And my dad was coming to the United States. And my dad was, like, really awkward. And very shy. And he just, like, asked his mom. He was like, I want to get a wife. I'm going to the United States. And he, like, basically just was like, well, I'm not going to know anybody.
Yeah.
And I don't want to know anybody. And basically, he was like, I want to marry your best friend.
Yeah.
And that, like, and then they were married a month later. And my mom went, because my mom was like, America? Will I meet cowboys? Rad. Which cracks me up because I'm like, my mom went with my dad to America because she wanted to meet other men.
That's amazing. Cowboys.
But did they get along and stuff? And
I think so. I mean, I think so. Like, they had a like rocky up and down marriage because it was like, you know, I mean, it's really like any marriage. I mean, I've been married for like 5 years, but I've been with the man I'm with, Duncan, atheist, whitey white, infidel, idiot boy, for 15 years.
Whoa.
That's such a perfect view of men. Just like
He's my adequate man. He's my adequate white man.
Well, that's a long time, though.
15 years, yeah. My parents have been together for 40 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, they had like their honeymoon period. Mm-hmm. And then my mom said there was like a period of time where she was like, I don't want to be married to this guy anymore. And she called her mom and was like, I don't think I want to be married to him. And her mom was like, well, you are. So too bad.
Yeah.
She was like, what the fuck? Yeah. You know, but it's like in my marriage also is like there are times where it's like, are we supposed to break up now?
Yeah.
You know, and then you listen to Tinder stories and are like, clearly not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So they come here. They're going to school. Do you have any siblings?
I do. I have 3 siblings.
Oh, wow. So where are you in that birth order?
First, best.
Oh, wow.
Hey, so they master.
Had you. And then you're like, when did they have, were they still in school or was it after they graduated?
Okay. So I was... I'm all, master is a problematic adjective. Still there. Okay. They had me.
Uh-huh.
And then, yeah, like they had all of us here. But I just have such a different upbringing. I'm 11 years apart from my youngest sister.
Okay.
Whoa. We like grew up in different families.
Yeah. That's how it goes usually.
Yeah. Like Christmas for us was, I came home because this little chick at school, Jessica, They were when I went to school, I was in ESL because my parents only spoke Farsi. I went to ESL, learned, and then they put me in the regular kindergarten. And they were singing Christmas songs. And I was like, I don't know what these songs are. Is there homework? I can read. Do you have lyrics? I can read them. And this little girl, Jessica, was like, you don't know Santa? And I was like, who is Santa?
Yeah.
And the songs were like freaking me out. They were like, you better watch out.
Yeah, those are freaky songs.
You better not
cry.
Yeah. You better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. He sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake.
Yeah.
He knows if you've been bad or good. And I was like, who is this man? What does he look like? She was like, you don't know Santa? And I was like, no. Can you describe him so I could tell my parents to keep an eye out for him?
Yeah.
And she was like, oh my God, Santa's just the best. He's got like a big white beard and a robe and a hat.
Yeah.
And I had all these textbooks and coloring books with Khomeini.
Yeah.
And I said, do you mean Khomeini?
Oh, no.
Because in all my books, he was a jolly guy. He was like dancing with kids. They were propaganda textbooks. Yeah. It was like Fox News, but for preschoolers, but in Iran.
And he did have a white beard and he was always watching you.
Exactly. Yeah. My parents were like, he's always watching. And she was like, well, we call him Santa.
Oh,
and I was like, what does Santa Khomeini do
in
America?
That's amazing.
And she was like, he flies in a sleigh pulled by reindeer. And I was like, shut up. And he like lands on your roof. I was like, how does he know where my roof is? She goes, Santa Khomeini knows where everyone's house is. I was like,
oh my God.
She's like, if you're good, then he brings you chocolate and candies. And I was like, oh, my God. And she's like, but you have to have a Christmas tree. That's where he puts the presents. And I was like, boom, done. I got it. I ran home and I was like, Mom, Dad, we need a tree. Santa Khomeini is coming. And I was like grabbing their socks, the biggest ones I could find, and like trying to tack them onto a wall. My dad was like, whoa, 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 whoa. And he explained to me Marxist theory. Conspicuous consumption.
Yeah.
And that there was no Santa Claus.
Oh, my God.
That was my Santa Christmas story.
Uh-huh.
Okay, 11 years after me is my little sister. She grew up in, like, the house that we still are in, which I went to a different elementary school for every year because my parents were still in school, right? Like, they were still getting their PhDs. And then her first wish when she could, like, first formulate a birthday wish, was a Christmas tree. So we got a Christmas tree.
Wow.
And now we have two Christmas trees.
Yeah.
Like, not even in different rooms. Just, like, on opposite sides of the room. Because she wants to decorate one way and then another way the other one.
That's how it goes with the baby, man.
Yeah. And then, like, my Marxist dad drives a Mercedes.
Yeah.
Like, just a very different family dynamic. Than the one that I grew, the Fievel story that I grew up in versus the, like, you know, Full House story that my sister grew up in.
Yeah.
Like, she came to one of my shows and she was like, was life really like that for you? It's like, who are you?
Yeah. It's wild. My little sister was raised so vastly differently than I was. I'm the middle child. And so me and my older sister are closer than my younger sister. But they raised her so differently. It's absurd. And she's only 5 years younger than me.
What about the oldest kid?
We're only a year and a half apart, so we were raised pretty similar.
That's like me and my sister.
Yeah.
Okay, are you ruthless?
The middle? Yeah, I am.
See, there you go.
Yeah.
Are your middle siblings ruthless?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I'm out of all my siblings, I rebelled and made the most trouble.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. So... Are your parents Christian? Like, were they raised Christian or what's their...
Muslim.
They're Muslim.
Yeah.
And so they were like, when your sister was like, I want a Christmas tree, they were like, no problem.
Yeah.
Cool.
But when I was like, I want a Christmas tree, they're like, let me tell you about Marxist theory and conspicuous consumption and tools of the West.
But were you raised knowing what Islam was and everything, or was it more?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I had a very Islamic background growing up. It was very much a part of my identity. It was very much a way that my dad stayed connected with me, you know, as I grew up as a American kid, you know, and it was like, how do we, like, all of my, what I call, like, religious mythology was, like, such a part of, you know, staying connected with my parents and their cultural background. And then, like, weighing that all up against what I was hearing, you know, in the world. And I'm highly suggestible.
So are your parents very religious?
They were. I mean, they are. Their parents are very religious. They just, over the years, I think, felt less and less. Like, people use words that I don't like. Like, people will say they assimilated. People will say they became less Muslim. People will say they became more progressive, which I find all to be problematic, idiotic, very vague terms. Yeah. What I would say, as I would frame it, is that, like, as the years went on, they felt less of a need to be vigilant about mm-hmm. their traditions mm-hmm. because they felt, you know, like their bearings, mm-hmm. you know, and the stakes were a little bit lower.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it was cool. But like, and they also, and by that I don't mean that like their assumptions about threats against them, you know, changed. Because I think that's what a lot of liberals tend to kind of say when they say like, oh, like that's what I imagine them hearing. Like, it's like, I just see it like a room full of white people being like, oh, so your parents like let up and realize they don't have to be so bitter and mean. Mm-hmm. I was like, no, bitch.
I always like to say I learned this recently, like my dad's testosterone levels went down because he got older. And then I was like, oh, I can like see like just physically he's a little less tense because he doesn't have as high testosterone. And I try not to look at it being like he's not as whatever or anything. It's just like more like, oh, he's just biologically a little more
relaxed.
That's
such a thing. You're right. I didn't even like, think about that. That totally happened for my dad too.
I mean, like, but it's also everyone grows, and I think it's just more it's more easy to look at like a group of immigrants and be like, look how much they've grown. Like,
but it's not just, I don't know that it's about being more grown. Like, I think that's one piece of it. Mm-hmm. I think it's also that like the assaults on them on the day to day, they got a handle on how to deal with.
You have to get a tough skin.
Like, you figure it out. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like people were less racist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's just that my dad and mom figured it out a little bit more, and it didn't have to come at their expense and their kids' expense.
Yeah. I would say the same for my parents. Yeah. Just a learning process.
On that note, we're going to take a quick commercial break and figure out if we're more progressive. No, I'm not progressive at all.
We're going to
involve. Yeah. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back.
Yeah.
We're totally assimilated.
Yeah, we've been assimilated. I've grown. No, I don't know. I never grow. I'm never evolving, you guys. I'm just my old self.
Well, you know what they say in Queer Eye. Lean in, plant down, grow up.
That's funny considering what
I know.
Earlier, she was not that much of a fan of Queer Eye.
Don't help me.
No, I mean, it's fine. Like, it is what it is. Like, it's a show. She said it was... What did you call it? Like porn for...
It's liberal porn.
It really is liberal porn, though. I mean, I can admit that it's true, even though I still watch it.
I love it. I watched the whole thing. I couldn't stop.
It is 100% liberal porn.
Yeah, and I always get emotional. I'm always like, that's so great. And then I'm like, this probably won't last long, though. Like, it's great for the episode, but I don't know where this is going necessarily.
This man is not going to make guacamole every week.
I mean, for me, the angle of it that drives me nuts is just like, you know, no, it doesn't end at us all, like, loving ourselves and each other.
Mm. Let's get into you. And when you finally were able to watch TV, did you like comedy or like, how did you realize like, oh, I want to make people laugh?
Oh, when I was a kid, I was obsessed with soap operas.
Okay.
Yeah.
And like, there was always these like love triangles. Mm-hmm. And that's when I think I first realized I was bisexual because in the love triangles, I was always like, why don't you just have sex with each other?
It really is the case, though.
I don't understand why you guys just can't have sex with each other. Yeah. Cassie can have sex with Vicky, and they can have sex with Bo. They can just, the three of them, they can just do it. One life to live. Let's go YOLO. Oh, my God.
That's
my,
so
like,
funny.
Tween heart and hormones. Comedy, I like, comedy to me was like a superpower. Mm. I saw it. I didn't like fangirl like comedy, like, you know, like, oh, that's so funny. I was just like, it was like a superpower to me. It was like, how did he do that? It was like, you know, magic tricks, you know? When I was a kid, I remember as early as five, like using every moment that could have been a hate crime as an opportunity to make somebody laugh to protect my mom because she wore a hijab during the 80s when that told people that you were Iranian and an enemy of the state. So I was always like, you know, trying to be the funny kid.
Right.
And trying to be likable and present myself as like the likable American kid and a foil to my mom to like ease tensions. So to me, it was always like this like superpower is like, and I actually, we were drawing X-Men cards once. I was like this total tomboy. We were drawing X-Men cards with my neighbor and giving them like superpowers. And I was like, mine can make anyone laugh at any time, no matter what the situation. And he was like, you mean like the Joker?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay.
Well, that is, I feel like as the child of immigrants, you kind of become that, like you become the like translator of not even just like words, but just like everything, just experiences.
Totally.
You're like there being like, oh no, like it's not like that. It's actually a lot more fun. We're all cool. We're all
normal.
You're the bridge. Yeah. And I felt like I did that a lot. My mom never wore a hijab, but she's very devout Muslim, like prays five times a day, like does her thing. You wouldn't know because she's never like outward about it. She's on her own shit. Like she's just very like, this is my life and who cares? Fuck you. I'm doing my thing. So there would always be times where I'd always have to like, she'd be like, distract him. I'm going to go pray. Like wherever we are. So I was like, just like go talk to them. Like I'm just going to go like in the dressing room. I'm going to go in this random room, or I'm going to go in the bathroom, or I'm going to just go in the car for like 5 minutes. Like just make it look like I'm not doing what, you know, like I'm just doing my thing. And so like, that was always my thing. Like I was always like, hey, nothing is here. You know, like where did my mom go? I don't know. Don't worry about it. I just feel like that's like what you
that's
become.
That's amazing.
Just kind of like the kid who's just, you know, like I know how to deal because I'm American technically. My nationality is American. So I know how to like be out there and interact with adults who are like, you know, like white parents who are being like, oh, where did your mother go? And you're like, don't worry about it, weird lady.
Yeah. It is interesting how like children of immigrants, they use comedy as like just a way to, I don't know, like, yeah, to translate your experience. Because I loved comedy growing up and I loved making people laugh. And I think it was a way for them to be like, yeah, you are approachable. And even though you're weird, you're still funny. And we like you. But then, so when you were in high school, when you graduated high school, did you know where you wanted to go as far as like what you wanted to study or what you wanted to do or anything like that?
I was really lost. I actually ended up with a degree in fashion design.
Whoa.
Yeah, which doesn't make any sense if you know me. I wear like maybe 3 outfits for a year.
Yeah.
I have a uniform. I just was really lost. I didn't know what it was that I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to be a writer. I knew I loved TV and film. There was one time when I was like, I think it was like 12, because I got to spend summers at home by myself, you know, or if I was ever sick, I would just get to stay home alone because like 12 meant you were an adult in the
80s. Yeah.
Right. And I remember one time I was watching CBS and I like there was this like running battle between NBC versus CBS that they like used to reference all the time in their shows.
Mm-hmm.
And I like started watching CBS like, oh, like I want to help them out. It looks like they're struggling. And then like I had an idea and I like called, I opened up the phone book because there was no internet.
Yeah.
I opened up the phone book and I looked up CBS's like executive director of like television. I dialed numbers. I don't remember what they were. I dialed and I heard a receptionist say, hi, like CBS something something, like television film something something broadcasting. How can I help you? And I said, I would like to talk to the person in charge of television shows. And she said, one moment. And she just transferred me.
Whoa.
Dude, the 80s.
And this guy answered the phone. And I said, hey, I have a couple of television ideas that I think can help you because I see how you guys are struggling to keep up with NBC.
Oh, my God. What did they say?
He goes, do you have an agent?
Oh, my God. It's like your mom.
I said, no, no, you're silly. I'm 12.
How did he get there? That receptionist was fired. Just like, stop putting 12-year-olds through.
I'm 12. Yeah. I just have ideas and I just want to help you out, like totally for free.
Yeah.
You can talk to me. This is my number. Bye.
Oh my, that's badass.
And so, are you the reason Big Bang Theory is
on? No!
for like years. You're like, and I had one idea.
There's so many things I could take credit for. Yeah. Damn it.
That's hilarious. Don't, wow.
Don't let it be Big Bang Theory, though. Anything but that.
That's amazing.
I always wanted to be a part of the narratives that represented people and influenced people about how they saw family, because I saw how it affected mine. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I really understood what it was that I wanted to do until I took the solo performance workshop with Kamau Bell.
Okay.
And he had this class where you created a one-person show after 8 to 10 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And you had to start the show or start the session with a top 10 list of the things you're afraid to say out loud.
Ooh.
And number three for me was, I'm afraid I'm not Muslim.
Whoa. Wow.
And that's like the only one I remember. I took his class like 5 times, so many lists, and I don't remember any of them. Just that one. Yeah. I'm afraid I'm not Muslim. And he was like, well, I think you are. And I was like, that's not up to you.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, who is it up to? And I was like, oh, it's up to my dad. And it, like, this story, All Atheists Are Muslim, came out.
Mm-hmm.
That was the play that I penned in that class about moving in with my whitey white atheist infidel boyfriend and telling my Iranian Muslim parents about it and the antics that ensued.
Well, how old were you when you moved in?
I was 25.
Okay.
In like, you know, oh my God, my rent, $9.75.
Wow.
Oh, rent control. Life.
It was in L.A.?
No, this was in the Bay Area.
Wow.
Right?
Wow. What a time to be
this
alive.
This was like 60 years ago.
Exactly. $975 rent control. Why did we leave? Yeah. Oh my God. And like, we were splitting it.
Yeah, wow.
That's crazy.
Well, how did you and your whitey infidel boyfriend meet? Can I ask?
College.
College.
Yeah.
And where did you end up going?
I went to UC Berkeley.
Okay.
Like, I had such a roundabout track to finding comedy. It took forever.
Yeah.
Because I didn't see anybody like me out there.
Yeah.
And I just, in my head, assumed that I had to sound like a white guy. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that going into it. Going into it, I just was like, I don't sound like how you're supposed to sound to write for television.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what that meant. And I remember in one of my screenwriting classes telling my teacher, like, I don't know how to write men.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he was like, well, just watch some George Carlin. And there's a joke about a hole in a fence and how we'd fuck anything. And I was like, okay, I'm not sure how that helps me with my second act climax in the script that I'm writing. But like, I didn't know, like, I thought that's how you have to write, is you have to write to white men. And I went into English Lit at UC Berkeley, and I went into psych. I transferred. I went to comparative lit for Persian and French studies. I transferred and went into film. I transferred and went into theater. And then when I found theater, we were learning about Sheree Moraga's play, Mexican Medea.
Right.
And it just blew my mind. Oh. She just, like, she took it, she rewrote it, she took patriarchy, she, like, you know, just balloon animaled it. And I was like, damn, I didn't know you could do this. I'm staying here. And I found theater.
Oh. Wow. So when did you end up getting the degree in fashion design?
That was like after high school. I was like so totally lost. Didn't know what I wanted to do. Had a bunch of doodles of girls wearing cute clothes.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, they're like, there are recruiters that their job is to just like get you on a $30,000 payment schedule.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For a private school, a private art school. And she was like, oh my God, you're so talented and we have to have you here. We love you. Like, this is amazing. You're meant to be a fashion designer.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, somebody sees something in me. Yeah. Okay, here I go. Oh,
so where was that at?
That was at San Francisco.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then you went to Berkeley after that.
Yeah, because I wanted a liberal arts degree. I wanted to be a writer.
Yeah.
But I guess the one thing it did give me was that was the first time I ever worked on a creative deadline.
Mm. Yeah.
And it gave me a structure for how basically to freelance in the future.
Yeah.
That was actually really cool. Like. And I learned that I have ADD.
Mm.
Everybody there
Good
had ADD.
Know. Good to know.
And I was like, oh, yeah. Would have been helpful to know about high school.
Yeah.
The most linear time of my life.
When I learned I had ADD, I was like, this would have been helpful 10 years ago.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What did your parents think about wanting to go either to fashion design or then to Berkeley to study writing? Like, what are your parents?
They were always thinking about job security.
Yeah.
It was just like, what has a PhD?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, in fashion design, my dad was like, okay, I could see that. You're going to entrepreneurial business. All right, fine. You know, and then like English Lit, he just was like, what's the outlet?
Yeah.
Are you going into publishing? Or are you going, you know, and I was just like, I don't know what I want to be. Mm-hmm. I don't. And I mean, really, the answer was, I just don't see anybody doing what it is that I want to do. That was my problem. Like
that was my problem. I had no idea what I wanted to do. And nothing seemed reachable because I was like, there's no one like me doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know. And then people always assume that you're going to know those questions.
Yeah.
I didn't know to ask, like, you know, oh, so in what ways is the bar comedy scene a hegemonic space for the translation of white supremacy that I may or may not be able to dismantle in the span of a 5-minute joke?
Yeah.
I didn't know to ask that when I was 19.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so you were in theater in college.
I was in theater.
So that was my, like, maybe like your first time, or maybe like you were on stage for like performing in some capacity.
Yeah.
But how did that love of being on stage translate to being comedy?
So I did a talent show. At UC Berkeley, the Iranian Student Cultural Association had a talent show.
Yeah, nice.
My friend told me to take all my jokes about my dad and string them together for a routine, and I did it, and it killed.
Yeah,
and it was the first time I actually ever felt connected to the Iranian community around me. Like my whole life, I never felt connected. I was always too tall, too big, too loud.
Yeah,
not ladylike enough, not feminine enough, not frail enough. Not
same.
Yeah.
Same my whole life.
It was the first time I actually felt like I belonged. And people were like, oh my God, I'm just like your dad. But they just wanted jokes about my dad.
Mm-hmm. Was your dad there?
Yeah, he was like crying and laughing.
Oh, he liked it.
He loved it.
That's me. That's me.
He wasn't offended at all or anything.
No, I mean, it actually was really healing because my whole life he was my bully.
Yeah.
You know, and he felt really bad about it. And he didn't know how to ever engage with me because he just always felt like a dick. But he was always worried about me. Mm-hmm. And my younger sister was ruthless.
Yeah.
And he always, like, I was cracking up because a friend of mine was telling me about how his two daughters were fighting. And he was like, you know, come here, girls, come here. You know, you two have each other and you are each other's world and you have to be there for each other. You guys are growing up together, like from scratch. No one will be there for you like you are with each other. Mm-hmm. You need to be together. Be friends. This is your sister.
That sounds like my parents telling me and my sister to get along. Exactly like that.
Yeah. Okay, here's how it went for me. Listen, you two have each other. You know each other the best. If you cannot defeat each other.
Defeat?
You cannot defeat shit in this world, man. Okay, get it together. Like, it was like. Yeah.
Defeat?
If you can't take your sister down, who can you take down?
Oh my God.
You know her the best.
Oh my God.
Get it together. And I was like, I don't think that's. And my sister was like, pow, bam, whack. I was like, oh shit.
Yeah.
Damn.
Ruthless.
So, actually, let's take a quick commercial break and we'll be right back. And we're back to clean up some subplots. I do have a question. So how did your parents feel about you getting into stand-up? Like transitioning that into like a full-time
I mean, my mom has always been like a do you.
Yeah.
You know, kind
That's
of.
That's nice.
Like, yeah, she was super Oprah. My dad was like, you're going to die.
Yeah, you're gonna die alone and poor.
Yeah. He's like, you're going to die. What is this? Like, you perform at a bar? What do you even make? Nothing. Yeah, they pay you in beers. You don't even drink. I hope you don't drink. You're around the guys. Like, you know, and he always was just like so worried. And he was like, I don't like this. But then when I started doing my one person show, you know, then he actually was like, okay, like this is, you know, I was in a theater. I brought audience. He was like, oh, wow. All right. Like, you're standing. He always would say, stand on your own 2 feet, be a hungry bulldog.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what he saw. And then he wasn't worried anymore. You know, he was like, okay, I see you're doing the thing. And then he tried to be funny on purpose.
Yeah.
To give me material.
Oh, yeah.
Which is adorable.
Like, hey, do you see what I did there? You can use that.
Yeah. And like, you know, he would see how his accent was like my punchline all the time at like bars. And he would like try to amp it up to give me more accent jokes.
Yeah.
What if I say this like this? You know, hey, your daddy's a cowboy now. Like, do that joke. It's like, say that. That's funny.
That's actually really sweet because I feel like a lot of immigrant parents would get like offended or like think you're making fun of them in some way. But I mean, you are, but they would take it more personally.
Yeah.
But it's cool your dad had like a lighthearted approach to it.
Yeah. I mean, I do want to say like, It is fair to get offended by it because it is like you are there performing for a group of like predominantly other young white comics that are like, yeah, your dad's accent is funny. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. And then the repercussions of that is that, like, you know, yeah, so then I'll be real. Like, the repercussions of that are this. When people are like, oh, yeah, your dad's accent is funny, it also translates to this, is when your brother has cancer and is at the doctor's office at 15 years old. And, you know, your dad is like, he doesn't have just growing pains. He's in pain. You know, and the doctor calls your brother to say, oh, you just have scoliosis. I'm just going to tell you because your dad doesn't speak English well enough.
Ugh.
You know what I mean? Yeah. My dad has a PhD.
Yeah.
So it's like entirely this man's perception that as a result of an accent, cognitively, my dad can't keep up with him.
That infuriates me because people that can speak multiple languages are the smarter smartest, than right? anyone else.
It's like he moved to a different country,
yeah.
learned the English, and then went to school in his second yeah. language and then got a PhD. It's like,
yeah. In a country where yeah. the first language is just in your head. Like you're forced to use the second or even maybe third or fourth language.
And then on top of that, he raised a bunch of kids who are like, whatever, dad. And still was able to get through yeah. it. It's like,
it infuriates me.
Smartest dude in the room, probably.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is like, I hear folks and I hear other comics and I hear how hard it is because, you know, you've got 5 minutes and you got to get a laugh. And it's like, how are you going to have teaching moments
yeah.
so that you can write a joke? You don't want to be that comic either.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, there are actual repercussions. Like, this is how it then translates.
That's yeah. true. I think it's so, I didn't realize how different it would be to perform to a predominantly immigrant audience or Iranian audience versus a white audience, because then it's like almost like giving them permission to laugh at you.
Right.
And that's not good.
That's what they're seeking.
Yeah. Yeah. Damn. Well, so you had a question. So you were struggling whether you were a Muslim or not.
Yeah, for a long time. And then I think when I introduced my dad to my atheist, infidel, white boyfriend,
mm-hmm.
I think that was like the big breaking point for me. It was my way of saying, I don't know if my life lives up to the expectations that you raised me with. And I don't know if they ever will, because I don't know that I espouse to them.
Have you ever told your parents that you were bisexual?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did. I came out on our podcast, Good Muslim, Bad Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
You guys had Taz on the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wanted to eventually get to that, to you hosting this podcast.
Yeah, yeah. In the wake of Orlando, the Orlando shooting and mm-hmm. all the conversations around, like, can you be Muslim and gay? Is it possible?
Mm-hmm.
I felt a need as a woman who was in a monogamous, heteronormative relationship with very supportive parents that I didn't feel like I had the risk of, like, losing.
Yeah.
In a privileged position to be able to hold space to say, I'm a bisexual Muslim woman.
Mm-hmm.
Eat shit. Yeah. <You know? laughs> Yes, you can be Muslim and gay. Fuck you.
Yeah.
You know? That, like, it's not up to you. And I did it. I came out on the podcast and it was a hell of a time. I was really scared. I was terrified. I was, you know, because I'm in this heteronormative relationship. Should I be taking up space? Should I, you know, am I gay enough? Am I Muslim enough? Am I gay enough?
Yeah.
And then the piece went viral. It went to 80 million people.
Wow.
Amazing.
The website crashed. It was for Bitch Media.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Shout out to Sarah Merck, my editor, who helped me birth the piece.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I should probably tell my parents.
Yeah.
And I've never prayed so hard that my parents found my stick figure orgy porn when I was 12. No, I'm not 12. I think I was 14. 12 is a little early for orgy porn. I think I was 14.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, please, please have found it. Like, there was, you know, when your parents clean your room?
Yeah.
I had, like, drawn stick figure porn.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Of threesomes from One Life to Live.
Uh-huh.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I know. It's very creative.
Yeah.
Very resourceful. Yeah. I was like, I want the storyline. I storyboarded.
Yeah.
Alternative endings for One Life to Live with stick figure porn. And I was like, I really want this to happen.
You
it's so hot. It's
fan
so hot.
Fiction,
I have some ideas for you.
Called the same guy.
Yeah.
Listen, if Cassie just goes down on Vicky and then Bruce helps.
Yeah.
Bo. It's Bo. And then my dad, like, it had moved. My dad cleaned out my room and the stick figure porn had moved from one side of my bed to the other.
Oh.
And I was like,
yeah.
Oh, my God. Holy shit. And, like, I was mortified forever.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, you know, then fast forward to, like, decades later, and I'm like, please have found the stick figure porn.
Mm-hmm.
Please have read about being gay, please have like watched Oprah and Dr. Phil and Ellen, and you're like over it now. And when I tell you guys, you're not going to flip out and you're going to be cool and you're going to be fine.
Yeah.
And they were actually awesome.
Wow.
My mom, like, I'll never forget what she said. She said, nobody comes between you and Allah. No one has any right to decide how Muslim you are or what that means.
Yeah.
Ever.
Amazing.
And she said, Moses parted the sea. Mm-hmm. Jesus walked on water. But Allah gave a young illiterate orphan boy a book and said, read. Because self-discovery makes a prophet, not a bunch of self-righteous jerks.
Wow.
Your fucking parents are amazing.
That's
amazing.
Right?
Yeah.
I just like burst into tears.
My parents, my mom knows I'm queer, but I think my dad's a little bit in denial. And I'm still terrified of his family finding out. Because I don't think they're as open-minded as your parents are. I mean, his family are. I mean, my mom is fine with it, I think. I think they both think I'll end up with a guy, which is like annoying to me.
My dad did that.
Yeah.
He was like, well, but you're married.
Yeah.
I was like, ew.
Yeah.
It doesn't change that, like, I'm still, like, not
you
straight.
You are who you are.
Yeah.
Right.
So we only have a few more minutes left, but I want to talk about your podcast, Good Muslim, Bad Muslim, with Taz, who we had on this show previously.
Yeah. What
so
up,
tell
Taz?
Us a little about it. Shout out to Taz.
So tell us how maybe like you guys met and how the podcast came about.
What did she talk about? So I don't talk about the same things.
Oh, I don't remember anything. You know these things.
So, okay, we met because of the anthology, The Secret Love Lives of American Muslim Women.
Mm-hmm. Whoa.
We both had sexy stories.
Ooh.
And we both had snarky comments in the Q&As when people would ask us questions like, what about child brides? What about nuclear weapons? What about, you know? And it's just like, oh my God, this is a book of stories about women in their relationships.
Yeah.
Why are you asking me about foreign policy?
Yeah. What do you think of ISIS?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we also, like, it was so funny. The day we met, we were on the Totally Radical Muslim Zine board together. And she was having this meeting at her place. And I was like, I got to skip out. I got this deadline for this anthology. And she was like, what anthology? And I told her, and she was like, me too.
Whoa.
Oh, nice.
And we were both like, well, I hope we make it through the edits.
Yeah. Wait, but how'd you guys meet then? If you guys were connected before that,
it was just the zine.
Oh,
we found each other through the zine.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and then like we were like, oh hey, look, we made it through the edits.
Yeah.
What's up? Like, you know, and like drove to readings and we're like making each other crack up.
This is in LA, or this is where?
This is the Bay Area.
This is still in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so for a year, we had a hashtag conversation on Twitter. You know, we'd be like, oh, I'm married to a doctor. He's an atheist, but he's a doctor. Hashtag good, bad Muslim.
That's a funny one.
And like we would like play like this, you know, and we would say next time on our podcast, good Muslim, bad Muslim. And then people started asking, where's this podcast? And then PRI's Global Nation asked, where's this podcast?
Oh, nice.
And we were like, we better do this shit. And yeah, I'm like, if Taz was here, I feel like she would be like, we were already doing the podcast at that point.
Yeah,
so it was so cool. It was so cool to be able to like hold space for a conversation that we didn't see out in the world that we wanted to see, you know, and then now here I am with you guys doing it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just such a different like terrain now.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of amazing. Where can people find you and the podcast so they can follow your work and the podcast?
You can find me at zahracomedian.com. That's my first name, Z-A-H-R-A, comedian.com. All my haps are there. And you can find me on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, Zahra Comedy. I have a show coming up called On Behalf of All Muslims, a Comedy Special.
What date is that?
June 21st and 22nd.
Perfect.
It makes its theatrical world premiere at the Brava Theater in San Francisco. Please come.
Yes, go.
I've got 600 seats to sell.
Mm-hmm.
So be there.
Congratulations.
It's my album recording.
That's really amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm really excited.
Yeah.
Wow. And thank you so much for coming to do the podcast. Yeah. And everyone, go to her zahracomedian.com website. Buy tickets.
Yeah.
Go shout out.
Tell your friends. Yeah. We're in San Francisco.
Yeah. Listen to Good Muslim, Bad Muslim.
Download the podcast.
Yeah.
I think Ethnically Ambiguous is a pretty unique podcast, but it's like almost like I feel like a sister podcast with yours. Like it's like.
Oh, I like that.
We have. But because like there's just so few and far between as far as like brown like Middle Eastern women doing anything and then just and like being out there and speaking about their truths. And so,
where can people find you?
You can find me at ShiroHero666 on Twitter and ShiroHero on Instagram. And you can find the podcast at Ethnically Ambiguous at ThinkingAmB on Twitter at ThinkingBig on Instagram. And at ThinkingAmbiguousPod.com.
Yeah. And we'll post her website and stuff in our footnotes so you can go down and just click, open more info, and go to her website. And I'm at Anna Hosnia on Twitter.
Yeah.
Whatever you can call me.
Yeah. But yeah, support women and support your Middle Eastern women, and let's keep this party going.